Chapter 19. Tell them then, Barnaby, should he be engaged, apostrophe said Mr. Chester, that I shall be glad to wait his convenience here, and to see him if he will call, at any time this evening. At the worst I can have a bed here, will it, I suppose? Old John, immensely flattered by the personal notoriety implied in this familiar form of address, answered, with something like a knowing look, I should believe you could, sir, and was turning over in his mind various forms of eulogium, with the view of selecting one appropriate to the qualities of his best bed, when his ideas were put to flight by Mr. Chester giving Barnaby the letter, and bidding him make all speed away. Speed. Said Barnaby, folding the little packet in his breast, speed. If you want to see hurry and mystery, come here. With that, he put his hand, very much to John Willett's horror, on the guest's fine broadcloth sleeve, and led him stealthily to the back window. Look down there, he said softly. Do you mark how they whisper in each other's ears? Then dance and leap, to make believe they are in sport? Do you see how they stop for a moment, when they think there is no one looking, and mutter among themselves again, and then how they roll and gambol, delighted with the mischief they've been plotting? Look at them now. See how they whirl and plunge. And now they stop again, and whisper, cautiously together little thinking, mind, how often I have lain upon the grass and watched them. I say, what is it, that they plot and hatch? Do you know? They are only clothes, returned the guest, such as we wear, hanging on those lines to dry, and fluttering in the wind. Clothes. Echoed Barnaby, looking close into his face, and falling quickly back. Ha ha! Why, how much better to be silly, than as wise as you. You don't see shadowy people there, like those that live in sleep, not you. Nor eyes in the knotted panes of glass, nor swift ghosts when it blows hard, nor do you hear voices in the air, nor see men stalking in the sky, not you. I lead a merrier life than you, with all your cleverness. You're the dull men. We're the bright ones. Ha! Ha! I'll not change with you, clever as you are, not I. With that, he waved his hat above his head, and darted off. A strange creature, upon my word. Said the guest, pulling out a handsome box, and taking a pinch of snuff. He wants imagination, said Mr. Willett, very slowly, and after a long silence, that's what he wants. I've tried to instill it into him, many and many's the time, but John added this in confidence he had made for it, that's the fact. To record that Mr. Chester smiled at John's remark would be little to the purpose, for he preserved the same conciliatory and pleasant look at all times. He drew his chair nearer to the fire though, as a kind of hint that he would prefer to be alone, and John, having no reasonable excuse for remaining, left him to himself. Very thoughtful old John Willett was, while the dinner was preparing, and if his brain were ever less clear at one time than another, it is but reasonable to suppose that he addled it in no slight degree by shaking his head so much that day. That Mr. Chester, between whom and Mr. Airedale, it was notorious to all the neighborhood, a deep and bitter animosity existed, should come down there for the sole purpose, as it seemed, of seeing him, and should choose the Maypole for their place of meeting, and should send to him express, were stumbling blocks John could not overcome. The only resource he had, was to consult the boiler, and wait impatiently for Barnaby's return. But Barnaby delayed beyond all precedent. The visitor's dinner was served, removed, his wine was set, the fire replenished, the hearth clean swept, the light waned without, it grew dusk, became quite dark, and still no Barnaby appeared. Yet, though John Willett was full of wonder and misgiving, his guest sat cross-legged in the easy chair, to all appearance as little ruffled in his thoughts, as in his dress the same calm, easy, cool gentleman, without a care or thought beyond his golden toothpick. Barnaby's late apostrophe John ventured to observe, as he placed a pair of tarnished candlesticks, some 3 feet high, upon the table, and snuffed the lights they held. He is rather so, apostrophe replied the guest, sipping his wine. He will not be much longer, I dare say. Apostrophe, John coughed, and raked the fire together. As your oats bear no very good character, if I may judge from my son's mishap, though, apostrophe said Mr. Chester, and as I have no fancy, to be knocked on the head, which is not only disconcerting at the moment, but places one, besides, in a ridiculous position with respect to the people who chance to pick one up, I shall stop here tonight. I think you said you had a bed to spare. Apostrophe, such a bed, sir, apostrophe returned John Willet. Such a bed as few, even of the gentry's houses, own. A fixter here, sir. I've heard say that bedstead is nigh 200 years of age. Your noble son, a fine young gentleman, slept in it last, sir, half a year ago. Apostrophe, upon my life, a recommendation. Apostrophe, apostrophe, said the guest, shrugging his shoulders and wheeling his chair nearer to the fire. See that it be well aired, Mr. Willet, and let a blazing fire be lighted there at once. This house is something damp and chilly. Apostrophe, John raked the faggots up again, more from habit than presence of mind, or any reference to this remark, and was about to withdraw, when a bounding step was heard upon the stair, and Barnaby came panting in. He'll have his foot in the stirrup in an hour's time, apostrophe, he cried, advancing. He has been riding hard all day, has just come home, but will be in the saddle again, as soon as he has eaten and drank, to meet his loving friend. Apostrophe, was that his message? Apostrophe, apostrophe, asked the visitor, looking up, but without the smallest discomposure, or at least without the show of any. All but the last words, apostrophe, Barnaby rejoined. He meant those. I saw that, in his face. Apostrophe, this for your pains, apostrophe, said the other, putting money in his hand, and glancing at him steadfastly. Apostrophe, this for your pains, sharp Barnaby. Apostrophe, for Grip, and me, and you, to share among us, apostrophe, he rejoined, putting it up, and nodding, as he counted it on his fingers. Grip 1, me 2, you 3, the dog, the goat, the cats, well, we shall spend it pretty soon, I warn you. Stay. Look. Do you wise men see nothing there, now? Apostrophe, apostrophe, he bent eagerly down on one knee, and gazed intently at the smoke, which was rolling up the chimney in a thick black cloud. John Willet, who appeared to consider himself particularly and chiefly referred to under the term wise men, looked that way likewise, and with great solidity of feature. Now, where do they go to, when they spring so fast up there, apostrophe asked Barnaby, eh? Why do they tread so closely on each other's heels, and why are they always in a hurry, which is what you blame me for, when I only take pattern by these busy folk about me? More of 'em. Catching to each other's skirts, and as fast as they go, others come. What a merry dance it is. I would that Grip and I could frisk like that. Apostrophe, apostrophe, what is he in that basket at his back? Apostrophe, apostrophe, asked the guest after a few moments, during which Barnaby was still bending down to look higher up the chimney, and earnestly watching the smoke. In this? Apostrophe, apostrophe, he answered, jumping up, before John Willet could reply, shaking it as he spoke, and stooping his head to listen. In this? What is there here? Tell him. Apostrophe, a devil, a devil, a devil. Apostrophe, apostrophe, cried a hoarse voice. Here's money. Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Barnaby, chinking it in his hand. Money for a treat, Grip. Apostrophe, apostrophe, hurrah, hurrah, hurrah. Apostrophe, replied the raven, keep up your spirits. Never say die. Bo, wow, wow. Apostrophe, Mr. Willet, who appeared to entertain strong doubts whether a customer in a lace coat and fine linen could be supposed to have any acquaintance even with the existence of such unpolite gentry as the bird claimed to belong to, took Barnaby off at this juncture, with the view of preventing any other improper declarations, and quitted the room with his very best bow. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.